This episode contains subject matter referring to suicide, addiction, and mental illness. Please take care while listening. We will post resources in the show notes. For what really happens behind the scenes at a racetrack, you're in for a treat.
That's right. We are thrilled to have Graded Stakes Place jockey and content creator Ramon Moya. He's going to take us through his journey in horse racing, share insights on training thoroughbreds, and clear up some common misconceptions about the sport. Ramon, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
We're good. So excited you're here.
So excited you're here. Let's start with your background. How did you first get into horse racing and what kind of inspired you to become a jockey?
Yeah, growing up, I definitely didn't have any aspirations to become a jockey, let alone work with racehorses. I grew up in Newark and Harrison, New Jersey, and around that area, it's city-like, so I think the closest horses around us, probably an hour away. So I didn't really know too much about horses. All I knew was that my dad trained horses. Okay. And I lived with my mom, obviously. But I was 18 years old and I was working for the county as a boiler operator. Kind of a steady job, benefits, pension, the whole nine yards. But my dad kept nagging me and he really wanted me to try riding because I was always light. Yeah. I'm a little taller for a jock. I'm 5'7", but I was always like 118, 117. And I always thought I had a weight deficiency. I even went to the doctors and they're like, no, you're fine. So yeah, it was one of them things that he told me to come down and he'll hook me up with some people to start galloping and start learning how to be around horses. And I feel like I got thrown into the wolves. It was so scary. I remember he threw me on a horse for the first time in a shed row, and I'm like, all right. And there was a hot walker walking with me, but he's like, yeah, now go like up and down, like trying to post. And I'm like all over the place. They had my stirrups all jacked up. They give me two turns around the shed row, and my dad's like, all right, unclip him.
Oh, no. Mind you,
it was so bad. And mind you, this shed row was a jogging shed row in New York, in Belmont. They have these certain shed rows that you could jog in.
Yeah.
So the horse knew that I didn't know what I was doing. And when I tell you, the horse took off like he was breezing down the shed row.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, full. And then it came into a split, right? Because I'm like, all right, I'm going to hit the wall, or I don't know what this horse is going to do, because to the right is you go into the jogging shed row, and to the left is a regular shed row. It's like that square turn. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to die. I don't know what's going to happen. And the horse just propped, and thank God he propped. And I come flying off, and I always tell people this. Even before I hit the ground, I'm like, ah, this is definitely not for me.
It's so funny.
No way I'm going to be doing this. And then like 3-4 months pass, and I thought I'd give it another go, and he took me to a farm this time and actually learned on a retired racehorse. I wish I could remember his name. Something Danger. I know he's a big, beautiful horse. He was so calm and so patient with me. And I learned to do figure eights in the arena and just learn how to be around horses in general. And then after that, just took off for me.
Yeah, that's really getting thrown to the wolves right there. Just putting you on something in the shed row and being like, all right, away you go.
Yeah, it'll scare you.
So for people that don't know the ins and outs of the track, we're going to start with some kind of more simplification of your day-to-day role. But then your days start really early. Can you just walk us through what a typical day looks like for you?
Okay, so a typical regular day would be getting up at 4 a.m., having to leave the house by at least 5, just depending what track I'm working at. I live by Monmouth Park, so the days that I work at Monmouth in the morning, I don't have to get up that early, but for the majority of the year, I'm commuting to parks. So it's about an hour and 10-minute drive, so if I got to be there at 6, that means I got to be up at 4. I like to take my time, have my little coffee, and drive slowly whenever I get there. But yeah, the track opens at 6. My agent will text me the night before my set list. on what horses I have to get on and train and gallop or breeze. And it could vary from one horse, two horses, to there's some mornings where I get on 10. It just really all depends on what type of business I have and what type of day it is. If it's a big breeze day, Saturdays are super busy because a lot of people like to breeze horses. And then, for instance, today I got to Parks. I got on, I think, 5 horses. And then that ends around 9:30, 10 o'clock. And in between me getting on horses, I check trainers with my agent. That's how we pick up mounts, is just walking around. They say out of sight, out of mind. So we have to be there hustling mounts and seeing trainers. And then when that morning ends, at least for training, I head to the jock's room. Now, depending on how many horses I ride, depending on if I have to lose weight, almost every race day I have to lose weight like a wrestler. I go in a sauna for whatever time if I have to lose 2 to 3 pounds, but almost every race day I have to lose a little water weight because, as I said before, I'm 5'7". I wouldn't say I struggle. I do struggle with the weight. Not as bad. I eat very healthy, but it's harder for me to do weight than other jockeys. Basically, I'm in the jock's room by 10 o'clock, 10:30, and depending on what races I ride, it could be a busy day. It could be I could ride 3 or 4. Some days I ride the second or the first and second race and then the last race, so I'm there all day. And I don't get home till 5:30, 6 o'clock, and that's a regular day. But I'd say on busy days, I'd work horses at Monmouth Park. Then I drive to Parks to ride 2 races, and then I drive to Penn National to ride maybe a couple races at night, and then get home at 12 or 1 a.m.
Yeah, so that's a drive.
Yeah.
Yeah, so if you ask any jockey, ask them about their miles in the car, and it's absurd. The only good thing about that is it's a tax write-off, helps me at the end of the year, but I think I put 61,000 miles in 18 months.
Wow.
So it's a lot of commuting and it's long days. Like I said in a few interviews and podcasts, this is something that you have to love doing. It's a very rewarding job and it can be, but you really have to love doing this because it's a lifestyle. It takes the majority of your life and your time, and it's tough. It's almost 7 days a week. So yeah.
I was just going to say, do you get a day off?
I haven't in 3 weeks, but I will say winters are super slow for me. The winters, I get 2 days off. I'll take a Thursday and a Sunday off. And since there's only 3 days at Parks, or if I got to ship out to a different track one day, I might. But I feel like the spring and summertime and even the fall time are the busiest for me. I feel like those are my money-making seasons because so many racetracks are open. Around this area, there's Delaware Park, there's Monmouth Park, there's Parks Racing, Penn National, there's New York. Yeah, it's definitely been busy for me at least last month and a half.
Busy's good though, usually, right?
It's a good thing. It really is. You know what? I'll complain and I'll tell my agent, dude, I need a day off. But I will say after 2 days off consecutively, that's it. I don't know what to do with myself. I need to go do something. So it's one of them things that you think you want some time off, but you miss it. You really do.
Yeah, for sure. So you talked about some of the physical problem or challenges. How about what are some of the biggest mental challenges that you deal with as a jockey and how do you manage them?
It's a lot of people see, I want to say lavish lifestyle, but a lot of people think jockeys just come there, jump on horses, win, make money, and go home. And that's all there's to it. But there's a few guys that are probably like that and they have that type of business. But the majority, I would say 90% of jockeys struggle with getting mounts, struggle with winning. I made a TikTok the other day about that. I don't think I've won a race in the last 2 months. And career-wise for me, I think this is like the longest I've gone without winning a race. So it's something that's super challenging, but I've been here before, so I know how to deal with it. You just got to know it comes in tides. It's tough. It's also financially too, right? Because we get asked this question a lot. We get paid, right, to ride a horse. Even if the horse comes in last, we get that mount fee.
Yeah.
If you ride 10 horses a week, you know, it adds up to whatever, $1,000. But in reality, we have an agent to pay. I got to pay my agent 25%. Then I have to pay my valet 5%. Then, mind you, all the gas and expenses. So what I'm trying to say is if you're not winning races, you're really not making ends meet.
Yeah.
So that's one of the struggles that we deal with. I'd say another is getting hired and fired. You get taken off horses left and right. Even today, I got taken off a horse that I did nothing wrong on. The horse was in a spot that he couldn't win. I felt like he ran a great race, like maybe 3-4 weeks ago. And of course, they drop him in where the horse could gallop and I get taken off. So it's one of them things where tomorrow I got to go back there, and when I see the trainer, I got to smile and congratulate him. And that's just the way it is. It's, you have to eat that, just because trainers have a lot of horses, so you can never burn bridges. Sure. It's tough to get taken off horses. Even if you win, I've got taken off horses that I've won on. So it's, there's a lot of aspects to it. I'd say the weight challenges. I feel like a lot of jockeys have weight issues, making weight. I don't think it's as bad as it used to be with the heaving. I don't know if you know what heaving is.
I feel like I learned a little bit about this from watching that show Jockey with, I think, Mike Smith and a couple of the other big jockeys were on it, and they talked a lot about it on that show.
Yeah, it's heaving or flipping. When I first started my bug, that was around a lot, and I even did that for like my first year as a bug, and then I realized that's not the way to do it, and that's not the healthy way, but still, I wouldn't say some of us starve ourselves, but we're depleted most days, and I don't think people understand what it is to go in a sauna and lose 3 pounds, mind you, without eating anything for breakfast, get on 8-9 horses, you get to the jockey's room, and then you lose 3-4 pounds in water weight. And then it's not once you weigh in, you're good. No, you have to weigh in and ride like that, because if I have multiple races that day, I can't really rehydrate myself if I want to make weight, that is. You know? So. Yeah. It's tough going out there and performing at your best when you're parched, I will say that. So there's a lot of struggles mentally, like I said, with the financially and just not winning, or you feel like you're not good enough, or maybe you feel like you're not riding good enough, and it weighs on you. It's not something that you could just come home from and shake it off. I've learned how to deal with it a little better. But listen, I can't speak for Alex Conchari and I forget the other kid's name, the one that the two kids that committed suicide. But I have to imagine that it was the struggles of this game, and it's tough.
Yeah.
It's I think they did a survey. I believe it was a Jockeys Guild did a survey not too long ago, and they said 33% of the jockeys are dealing with some type of mental illness or some type of depression or anxiety, insomnia, whatever the case may be, or stressors. So that's a lot. And that's only 33% of the jockeys that actually took the test, because I think only 300 of us did it. So there's a lot of people that don't want to speak on that.
Sure. It's like you're living in a world where you want to project this idea of mental and physical toughness at all times, right? You're just like rock solid and nothing 100%. Can shake you. And so when do you get your moment to break down and feel those feelings?
You can't, because right now me personally, like I learned to let that go. But a lot of guys can't. They can't come out and publicly say, oh, I'm dealing with this, because trainers are not going to want to ride you. Owners are going to want the confident guy, the guy that's always smiling, the guy that's always dealing with adversity. But in reality, we're all humans, right? Mm-hmm. So I feel like it's so taboo to speak on it, and it shouldn't be like that. So I feel like the Jockeys Guild and a few other people are making some changes with that. I believe there's a hotline and there's a barcode that you could scan. They have the poster up in every jockey's room now. They have something that you could scan if you're dealing with any type of mental illness, or you feel like just you need to talk to somebody or some type of therapy.
Yeah.
Now, it's good to hear that at least there are trying to take some steps for support, but that is a really tricky situation.
Yeah, no, I feel like it's finally getting spoken about and people are finally hearing us. And Even with the injuries, that's another mental stressor.
Yeah.
So most of us are banged up, but most of us don't say it. I'm sore or something's bothering me almost always. Nothing serious, but I go in the whirlpool a lot and take a lot of salt baths. I get massages. I do cryotherapy. So it's tough on your body. It's not just mentally. It's tough on your body as well. And that's another thing, too, getting injured. Thank God I don't think I've had any serious injuries. I've been sidelined a few times, but nothing career-ending. But it's always in the back of your head, too.
Yeah.
People get paralyzed from this, man. So it's definitely a dangerous game, for sure.
Absolutely. Switching gears to be a little, hopefully a little bit lighter. What role does camaraderie play among jockeys and stable workers and people on the backside? Is it competitive or do you all support each other? What's that like?
It's definitely support in there to a certain point, right? I feel like there's definitely camaraderie and everyone's always laughing in the jocks room, or everyone, we ask about each other's kids and when we speak it about families. And but I feel like once we step out on that racetrack, it's every man for themselves, unfortunately. And not that's the way it should be, but I get it. Not too long ago, probably a few weeks ago, I was in a really bad spot with a horse. And I was not getting ran off with in a race, but in just in a really bad spot. And I yelled out for somebody that I know, and they shut me off. Not dangerously, but hey, he got to ride his race the same way I got to ride mine.
Sure.
There's definitely support for each other on a human level, but as a competitor and as a jockey, every man for themselves. I think Angel Cordero once said he wouldn't let his mom up the rail. So I believe I heard that. He said he wouldn't let his mom up the rail. I love that saying. So it's true. You got to ride your race and you got to perform.
Yeah. Absolutely. We're going to get into more of your social media content a little bit later in this interview, but can you explain, because I know you get a lot of questions about this over and over again on your videos, but the process of the traffic on the track as it pertains to jogging versus breezing and who has the right of way and things like that. Just you speak of a couple of buzzwords, and I think a lot of people would love to know what you mean when you talk about them.
Yeah, and you're definitely right about that. I had one person comment and saying, hey, you told us you're only supposed to breeze on the rail. What are you doing on the rail? And I was on the outside rail. And I was like, wait, let me clear that up. I did say you're only supposed to breeze on the rail, but that's the inside rail going the right way, counterclockwise. I was on the outside rail going the opposite way. So I had to clear that up. So yeah, basically every track is different as to like where you get on the track, but I feel like all the rules are the same in the States. So when you get on and you're jogging a horse, you got to go clockwise.
Okay.
But on the outside rail.
Yes.
It has to be on the outside rail. Now, sometimes you could be like, I wouldn't say in the middle, but let's say you have two horses jogging on the outside rail and you want to pass them, you could just go around them.
Mm-hmm.
You're supposed to say coming by. I feel like that type of horsemanship is a lost art. A lot of people just don't say that no more. Even like getting on the track, you're supposed to say coming off. You're supposed to scream out coming off, coming on, coming by.
Yeah.
Inside, outside. And even today I was filming and I started off my gallop and this one kid just flies, no lie, like inches from me without saying a word. And I'm like, man, where's the track etiquette?
Yeah.
Yeah, basically if you're jogging on the outside rail going clockwise. Now, once you turn, like if you want to jog off a little bit, because sometimes trainers will give you that instruction, turn them around, jog off a little bit, and then break into a gallop. Galloping, you have to be in the middle of the track and counterclockwise. And breezing, you should be on the rail.
Yeah.
Now, there's times when it gets really busy, even especially at Monmouth. After the break at Monmouth, there's got to be 60, 70 horses working.
Wow.
And I always make sure I have my goggles down. Not all the time when I'm breezing, I put my goggles down. But I know on certain days after the break, I'll have my goggles down because chances are when I turn my horse and start galloping and break off into a breeze, chances are somebody's coming behind me to breeze, or somebody's already breezing in front of me. So as to who has the right of way, it's really up to you. I've had times where two horses are breezing in front of me, and I started like maybe a furlong behind them, but I know I'm going to pass them. Now, if they're a little wide off the rail, I might go inside of them. I'll let them know, hey, inside. Or if they're really on the rail and I'm going to pass them, I'll just go on the outside of them. And then eventually I wouldn't come down on them, but eventually once I'm clear, I'll come down. So it's like an unspoken rule.
Yeah.
It's something that riders should know. But yeah, Ben, that's basically the rundown.
This is probably like a strange question, but can exercise riders and jockeys get in trouble for breaking the rules on the track when they're just working
absolutely.
The horses?
Yeah. Absolutely. You can get fined, actually.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So there's outriders at every racetrack. There should be 2 to 3 outriders out there. Now they police the track. So right now, I used to exercise horses in the morning with jockey boots on. Like I was so used to riding in racing boots that I used to get on horses in the morning with racing boots. Now the problem with racing boots is it doesn't have that heel, that big heel, like exercise or training boots do. So what happens is you're not supposed to wear them in the morning. And if an outrider catches you, they'll be like, hey, next set, make sure you change into your other boots.
Interesting.
Because the stirrups are a lot bigger on the training saddles. God forbid something happens, my foot could
slip
just through. Yeah, you don't have that little heel with the bigger boot to stop that. Amongst other things, they police the track. There's horses that run off with riders all the time, and outriders are supposed to. If I'm getting ran off with on a horse and I can't stop them, I'll wave to the outrider if I can, and they'll come and grab me. Or if a rider gets dropped and there's a loose horse, the outriders are supposed to catch them. Or let's say I'm supposed to be jogging because I'm on the outside rail, but I'm loping and I'm really getting into a gallop. The outrider will come and say, hey, slow it up because you're supposed to be jogging. Or there's times where I got ran off with trying to jog and my horse took off the wrong way. That's why they have outriders there. And they won't fine you for stuff like that because stuff like that happens.
Yeah. Just keeps everybody safe.
Yeah, they're just out there to keep everybody safe. There's two sets of sirens. There's the yellow siren. It means there's a loose horse. And then if the red siren is on, that means the horse is down or rider's down. And whatever you're doing, even if you're breezing, you have to stop.
Okay.
You have to stop and pull up.
Yeah.
Now, if you don't do that and you continue doing your breeze or gallop, you can get fined for stuff like that.
Yeah.
Gotcha. That must be tough in the middle of a breeze to just pull your horse up.
Yeah. I tell you what, in the middle of it is not that bad because at least you got your horse going already and they're blowing off some steam already.
Sure.
I'll tell you when it's tough, when you turn them and you're about to break off the breeze and then you got to stop them and all that momentum of them going into a breeze, that's tough. Man.
Yeah, that's hard.
Yeah, I see that
for sure. Oh, man.
They're just starting off, and they're like, oh, I'm ready to go. And you're like, wait, we got to pull up. So, yeah, you definitely got to be aware out there. I've seen a lot of bad accidents, but I feel like for the most part, the outriders do a great job.
So talk to us a little bit about how you adjust your riding style for different horses. They all have different temperaments, right, and different abilities. So what's your process like there?
Yeah, it just really depends. If I get to a trainer's barn and, like, for instance, I don't know the horse I'm getting on, I'll ask, hey, is this a baby? Has this horse ran before? What are we doing? So once I know what I'm doing, let's say it's a younger horse that's just galloping, I'll ride him a little longer, meaning with my irons, my stirrups. I'll drop my irons a little bit. There's an old saying, they say, the longer you ride, the longer you ride. So if I know the horses, if I've been getting on them, I don't jack my irons all the way up, but I like to ride like the way I'm racing. Maybe not that high, but Yeah, so if I don't know the horse or if the horse is just jogging, I'll drop my irons a little bit. And yeah, just it's one of them things that once you get on the track, you feel their temperament, you feel how they're going to be. They tell you like right away how they're going to be. I could figure out within the first 30 seconds if a horse is going to be tough with me or if they're going to be bouncing coming off the track. And every day is different. I've had horses that are super bouncy and super tough, and one day they're just super quiet. I feel like the weather plays a big role into that as well. In the winter, they're all tough. They're all feeling good. In the summer, I feel like it's so hot that they're a little more calm.
Yeah, I've loved some of your winter videos were especially entertaining.
Oh, I'm sure it was for you guys.
No, there were definitely days where I was like, man, I feel for him out there because this was a tough winter that we haven't had a tough winter in a long time. And I definitely felt for you in some of those videos.
It's been years since we had a winter like this.
The wind and it was cold.
Oh, it was brutal, man. Every time I got off the track, my hands were just hurting from frostbite. It was bad. It was bad. Even racing, because I feel like in the mornings, I could wear a bunch of layers and I could wear like a thicker glove and a thicker ski mask and a nice winter jacket. But for racing, you can't really wear that.
During your silks, freezing.
Silks, you probably have a thermal under and some leggings. And since I'm riding it with my stick and I'm throwing crosses, your gloves can't be that thick. You can't have these big old snow gloves. So it's a lot tougher when you're racing in the winter.
For sure. You spoke a little bit there about asking the trainers about the horse's experience level. What are some of the first lessons that you'll teach these young babies? I know it takes a while for them to get to the point where they're eligible for their gate card and things like that, but where does it start with these young horses?
So for the main part, if I'm honest, I try to stay away from babies when they first get to the racetrack.
Fair enough.
No, but it's not just me. Jockeys really aren't supposed to get on babies when they first get to the racetrack, right? Yep. I'm 116, 117 pounds. So these babies, they're getting to a new environment. They're a little spooky. It should be these bigger guys that are 180, 170 pounds, these big exercise riders that ride really long. So jockeys really aren't supposed to get on babies until they're already breezing. They're already until maybe, because when they first get there, they'll probably jog. Every trainer is different. It's up to them how they want to train their babies. They'll probably jog in company, then they'll gallop for a couple weeks, and then with the breezing process, it goes, I feel like most trainers do this. They'll start breezing them from the quarter pole to the wire. And then the following week, they'll do from the 3/8 pole to the wire. And then the following week after that, they may do the same thing from the 3/8 pole to the wire, but let them finish up a little stronger. And that's usually when trainers call jockeys like me in. When they're, I wouldn't say seasoned, but they've been at the racetrack already for a few months and they know the surroundings and they're not too spooky. But don't get me wrong, there's babies that I've gotten on for people for the first time here. It does happen, but for the most part, I feel like exercise riders should be doing that.
Yeah. I think the way I want to ask this question, since you also ride them in the morning, do you find that helps you build trust with once you get to the races with them? And does that building that trust, does it take a while or do you click with some horses immediately?
Yeah, I think that's huge. I feel like that's a huge plus because you know how the horse runs, especially if you're breezing them. I think that's why a lot of trainers like jockeys breezing the horses because you get a feel for them. But if you're getting on a horse every day, and there's certain horses that I do get on every day, and you build that rapport with them, and you know how they like to be held or if they're going to be tough. So I think it's a huge plus. And sometimes it just all depends. Sometimes you might not get along with a certain horse. I feel like that really happens to me. I have favorites, don't get me wrong. But it's not like I ever dislike a horse for anything like that. You know? I'd rather obviously get on the easy ones, but the tougher ones are a little more challenged to deal with because they want to go. But yeah, I feel like getting on them in the mornings definitely helps for the races because you get to know them a little more. Yeah, for sure.
Do you take them all at face value or do you note like certain lines of horses by certain sires are tougher, or do you just take?
No, for me, that doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
I know for trainers it does, and it should, but me, I take them, like you said, face value. I'll tell you how much I take that serious. I've had riders tell me, oh, be careful with that one, or hey, he pulls, and I don't listen to him because he might not do that with me.
Yeah.
9 out of 10 times when a rider tells me something about a horse, it don't happen with me because every horse is going to act differently with every rider.
Yeah.
Not necessarily differently, but I might get along with a horse that another rider doesn't, or vice versa. Mm-hmm. Another rider might get along with that horse better than I do. So I definitely take them at face value. Even when the trainer tells me, hey, this one's tough, I'll take it with a grain of salt. And at least I'm a little prepared.
Yeah, you like the heads up, right?
Yeah, of course. Or certain trainers would be like, look, he'll put his head down or she'll put her head down, but don't worry about her. She's not going to prop on you. Or, hey, this one lugs out a little bit. Or this one, when he turns, just be careful. So I love the heads up. I'd rather know than not know.
Sure.
But when I'm getting on a horse for the first time, that's when I'm like the most alert, most aware, just because I just want to see what he or she does and how they act. So it's definitely an adventure, I'll tell you that.
From everything that you've told us, and from I think what we can surmise, being a jockey is such a tough but extremely rewarding job. Can you speak a little bit about some of the biggest highs of your career so far? You have an incredible race record, by the way. I looked it up today and was like, I sent a screenshot to Emily and I was like, holy crap.
Yeah, I've been riding for a while. Yeah, I feel like my first win after my comeback, that was just significant for me. It was almost like, not almost, it was better than winning my first race, because at one point I didn't think I'd ever be on a horse again. So for me to pass the finish line and win a race, that was definitely a great high moment.
Was that your win at Monmouth? After,
yeah.
Yeah. I think actually we'll post a link to the article that Pollock did about
it. Yeah. Yeah. Story. Yeah. That was, I think it was in the Asbury Park Press, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
It was aboard Tis a Prince in 2021. I should know the date. I almost forget the date. I think it was like June 13th or something like that. It could have been like a week after my birthday, something like that. But horses like him, horses like Belle Pensario, she gave me my first stakes win back. Even older horses, I remember, like Big Sur, he gave me my first stakes win for my father. So there's definitely a lot of highs. As tough as this business is, I wouldn't be in it if it didn't weigh out for me. Because, of course, I need to make a living. I wouldn't say I do this for the money. It can be rewarding, but I do it more for the love and because I don't feel like I work when I ride horses. For me, it doesn't feel like work. There's days where, like, somebody will tell me, or like my mom or my friend will be like, hey, you've been working for 13 hours, right? Since you left at this time. I'm like, oh, it don't feel like it. You know what I mean? For me, it's almost like a hobby and I'm getting paid for it. So as tough as it gets with the mental struggles and everything and not winning, it's definitely a unique job. I feel like when I tell people I'm a jockey, they look at me like I have four eyes. So yeah, especially because I'm taller. They're like, oh, aren't you supposed to be 4'10"? Then I have to explain to them, like, as long as you can make the weight.
Yeah.
So it's definitely, it definitely has a perk. And I love sports to begin with. Even growing up, I love playing football and baseball and basketball. And I don't know, I just felt like I'd end up in sports, but I just never grew. So I'm like, all right, that dream's gone. So it's funny how I ended up in horse racing.
Yeah,
for sure. On the flip side, what have been some of the biggest challenges or setbacks that you've faced in your career?
For me personally, I got addicted to painkillers in 2015. I took a spill one day and doctor prescribed me pain medication, and I was the type of person that really hated pills. I wouldn't say at that time I didn't party. Like, I party, I drank a little bit,
yeah.
I smoked a little weed or whatnot, but I wasn't a pill person. And when I was in pain, I started taking prescription painkillers, and one thing led to another, and a year of taking it, it just spiraled out of control, and then I ended up stepping away. Not even stepping away, it took me away.
Yeah.
My weight shot up, my addiction became out of control. I was spending $200-$300 a day on, wow, on prescription pain meds. Yeah, so that wasn't too sustainable. And then eventually it led me to do heroin, which is something that if you would have asked me before all that, I would have thought you're crazy. Yep. You know what I mean? Heroin has such a nasty ring to it. And when people think of it, they're like, oh, you are injecting. I'm like, no, there's other ways to do it. And I feel like that's what kind of saved me, and that's why I'm here, is because I never mess with needles. Nonetheless, it's still the worst thing you could ever do or take or ingest.
And you had been racing for, what, 5 or 6 years already at this point when this kind of happened? Yeah.
Yeah. It was 2015. It started before that, though. I started taking them, like, in 2014. It was a good year before. And at first, it's all good because you're making money, and you don't think you have a habit because you're taking one here, then you're taking one there, and then you're like, oh, I'm going to take one to go to sleep. You know what? I'm going to take one to go ride. And then little by little, you're like, you don't have them one day, and you're like, wait, why do I feel so crappy?
Yeah.
And then even the first time I got offered heroin, I was like, whoa, dude, no. And then I was still sick and withdrawing from the pills that I was like, all right, I'll try it. And it unbelievably, it was the same thing. It's Percocets and prescription pain medication is just synthetic heroin. Yeah, it just took me out, man. And it's such an insidious disease that it turns you to a person that you couldn't believe in your wildest dreams that you'd become. 2015 turns into 2016. I go into my first detox and rehab. And I still don't think I got a problem. I still think, all right, once I go to the detox and come out, I'll be good.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did that, and then I didn't do the work. I didn't go to meetings. I didn't take it serious enough and say, hey, I'm an addict. Because I still didn't believe it. I was an addict. I just thought I was addicted to something.
Mm-hmm.
So fast forward, 15, 16 rehabs and detoxes.
Wow.
I couldn't get it right. I was in and out of jail every year. I'd go to jail for 3-4 weeks. Nothing serious, thank God, just a bunch of misdemeanors. But things you do that, when I tell people that now, they look at me like, no way, you? I'm like, yeah, addiction doesn't discriminate.
Yeah.
It doesn't care if you're Spanish or you're white or you're black or you're rich or poor, if you're a doctor, if you're a jockey, if you're anything, it doesn't discriminate. I feel like, especially nowadays, everybody knows somebody that's an addict in recovery or somebody that passed or a childhood friend or a family member.
Yeah.
And even losing my brother, I lost my brother in 2019. That still didn't get me clean.
Wow.
Like, people are like, wow, how come you didn't get clean after he died? I'm like, that made me worse. But by the grace of God, he gave me another chance. I went to my last rehab in February 16th, 2020, I did my last drug, and I went into rehab. I took it seriously, and then after the rehab, I moved into a sober house, and I had to find a sober house close to Monmouth because I wanted to get back into the horses, and slowly I did. I took it one day at a time. I started going to my meetings. I started surrounding myself with the right people. I met my brother and basically my best friend and sponsor, Anthony Margata. He's about to celebrate 11 years of sobriety. And we found this bond because we grew up in the same place. And then we're in the same business, and we're hooked on the same drugs, and we're both clean.
Yeah.
I ride a lot of horses for him now, but people like him, people like my family, like my mom and my brothers and my son, kept me clean to this day. It's something that at first I was scared to talk about because I'd feel like I'd be judged.
Yeah.
And it's one of them things that you just got to be honest, because me speaking out about it, it might help somebody. I know there's someone now that's struggling with what I was struggling in our game.
Yeah.
The odds, there has to be jockeys or trainers that, and the numerous jockeys and trainers that we help get clean since I've been clean, the numbers are crazy.
Yeah.
I don't regret coming out and saying my story because if I could save one person or help one person, then, you know, it's worth it. But yeah, that's the gist of it. I just celebrated 5 years clean.
Congratulations. That's huge.
Thank you. Yeah, it really is. It flies by. And then It's funny. You come out of rehab and you just think that your life's never going to be the same. You're never going to have the things that you once had. And you're never going to, your family's never going to trust you again. And with working a program and just doing it one day at a time, little by little, I'm speechless. I really am. The life that I'm living now, I wouldn't trade for the world.
Yeah. I think it's interesting what you're saying about being a little bit nervous about opening up about it and things like that. I'm somebody who talks a lot and very openly about mental health issues and things like that. And I always like to say that the more you show it to the light, the weaker it becomes. So if you stuff it down and you hide it in the darkness, it gets stronger because it just festers there.
So true.
I just always like to say when you bring it to the light, it takes away its power. So I think by sharing your experiences, you're inevitably going to connect with other people at some point, and especially on a platform like this and the other platforms that you've been able to utilize. I think it's huge. And I think that voice is going to have a strong echo amongst your community and beyond. So
I hope so. And that's the goal. As much as I love making videos about horses and everything, even on my TikTok, I made a TikTok about my recovery as well. So it's not something that I'm hiding. But you're right, you have to bring it to the light. And like I said, everybody knows somebody that's dealing with it. More than ever, there's a crisis right now. People are dying literally every day from drugs.
My goodness, Emily and I both lived in Philadelphia for years. Philadelphia is rough, man. It's just...
Yeah.
But yeah,
it's got to be bad. It's all, especially over there. I see videos in Kensington. It looks bad.
It's unreal. We're so grateful for you for sharing your story, and we really hope it does touch some other people. This is probably the most serious episode we've done so far, but we were really excited to share your story, your journey, and we're not afraid of talking about things that might impact others like this as well. But we're going to switch gears a little bit, and we're going to talk about some more stuff about the horses at the track.
Cool.
Every horse is different, right? We've been talking about that. And can you talk about some of the toughest horses that you've worked with and what's made them challenging? I'm looking at you.
He's such a handful. Let me tell you.
Now I recognize her tack. And so every time I see your video, I'm like, oh my God, there she is. She's so naughty.
She's a little feisty.
She's tough. And I think she had, at one point, the trainer was like, she had a couple days off. And they were like, we can't even walk her around.
You can't jog her. Like, it's like there's only one rider that can, and he still has a hand. She is when she wants to be nasty, she is like, she wants to get you off her. Like, let me, and she almost got me too. So yeah, there's always horses like that. For some reason, when that happens to me, I tend to laugh.
Yeah.
Until I hit the ground, because I've been dropped plenty of times, but I don't know why. I love when horses buck, and it's something in me. I like the adrenaline.
Yeah,
but
you must.
Yeah, no, I've dealt with a handful of horses that have been tough, I used to breeze this one filly, beautiful gray filly. She won some nice races in Jersey too. But when you would breeze her, she would stop and prop and wheel during the breeze.
She knew exactly what she was doing.
So when we would breeze her, somebody would have to be outside of me and stay with me. But she was such a nice horse that she was hard to hold while I try to wait for the other horse to keep up. And even pulling, I'm like, come on, get up there. While I'm holding her and even pulling up, I'd have the other rider like, all right, I'm going to push you out. Because once she stops, she's going to prop and wheel. But yeah, I've had plenty of horses like that. Or even out the gate, horses that when they come out the gate and want to make a left, it's those horses tough, but I feel like that's what makes you a good rider too. Those experiences, because if you just go out there and you get on the nicest horses and they behave themselves all the time, I feel like you're never going to learn anything.
Sure.
Though.
Yeah. Yeah. I love your videos where you're breaking from the gate. It just, that must be an incredible feeling.
Yeah. I just breezed one today from the gate and she just popped out of there, man, so fast. I feel like that's my favorite part of the job. Obviously, winning races is super rewarding, and there's no feeling like it. But it's another thing to see the progress of a horse, especially younger horses. And then you ride them in a race, and they run well or they win. And you're like, wow, I remember when this horse first got here and was learning.
Yeah.
So it's definitely rewarding. I feel like those are one of the pluses of, you asked me that question earlier of getting on horses every day and getting to know them. And I feel like that's the biggest plus, that you get to see their progress and how much they've learned and how well they're doing. So
that's really cool.
Do you have a favorite horse that you've ridden? Can you pick one?
I can't pick one. Because
we're going to get you in trouble.
Yeah, you're going to get me in trouble. But it's tough because I have two and they're both my top earners. And I love them for completely different reasons, because Belle Pensiero, I don't really get on her in the mornings. I'll breeze her once in a blue, like Margotta will have me come breeze her. But like when she runs, man, she gives me everything she has, man. Like, she is all heart. And even the announcers, like, she got her ears pinned back. She hates losing, man. And I just love that attitude about her. And obviously, there's a special connection there too, because she gave me my first stakes winner back. She's my highest earner. It's with my buddy Anthony Margotta. He trains her. So it's a million reasons why I love her. But Classic Union, unfortunately, I don't get on him anymore because they claimed him and I was heartbroken.
Oh, that's got to be so rough for you guys.
Oh, man, he was so cool to get on, so easy to get on. He was in a few of my early videos, and he was just all business on the track. And actually, he's the last horse I got ran off with. I haven't been ran off with in probably 5 years. Ever since I came back, I don't think I've ever been ran off with. And he ran off with me the wrong way.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my goodness.
Jogging, and he comes flying off the track full speed, and I can't stop him. Because I was riding him too long and I'm fighting him. So he gets tough, but you know, I was getting on him a lot. And then obviously I won 7 races on him too. He's another hard knocking horse too. But it was one of those bonds that I love the way he went in the morning. He was all business, man. Like, that's the definition of a racehorse for real. So I definitely have a couple favorites, yeah.
For sure.
You share a ton of behind-the-scenes content about racing and the horses that you work with on social media. What inspired you to start sharing that journey? And I know you had to ask for special permission to be able to get that footage as well.
Yeah, I have somebody at Parks that has to okay my videos just for insurance purposes, and I totally understand it. But it's funny because I almost didn't start doing it. I bought the camera. And then I'm like, you know what? It looks like a lot of work. I'm just going to return it. And I didn't. And I'm glad I didn't. But I just wanted to show people, like, what it is to be on a racehorse. Even, like, back in 2013, I used to play with GoPros. I have this old YouTube video that my brother did, like, this little short film that we did. And he threw a GoPro on my helmet. So I always wanted that. I always wanted to do that again to show people what it is to be on a racehorse. And I definitely didn't have any plans of content creating. It was just more of just like putting up videos and then, you know, putting music that I like with it and like cool scenes. Like, that's all it was. And then one day I'm like, all right, let me just try it without the music. And people like the noise of horses running on a slop, because I do. I love that sound. It's the best sound in the world, of horses like running over a sloppy track or a seal track.
Yep.
And one of the videos just took off. So I'm like, all right, maybe I'll just do no music. And then, I don't know, little by little, I just started talking and people started asking tons of questions. And then that's how I kind of base my next video on. Like, if someone's asking, what's breezing mean? Because sometimes I'll use terms that like only us horse people know, or at least us thoroughbred or racetrack people know.
Yeah.
It's good though. I try to answer almost every question, or at least like the comment, but I try to engage with.
Yeah, you're really good at that, it seems.
Yeah, yeah. And that's, like I said, that's how I base my next video on. So for a while I was saying, oh, this horse is tough, this horse is tough. And they're like, oh, what do you mean by tough? And then sure enough, I made a video explaining when a horse is tough, they're strong, they're pulling, they're on a bit. I feel that I have to engage and I have to see what people want to see or what they want to know about. Or sometimes I'm just laying in bed and I'll be like, you know what, this is a good idea. And then I'll write it down And then the next day or that week, I'll do a video and then I'll talk about it. So
that's cool. How do you think social media has impacted the way fans or maybe people that don't know that much about horse racing, how do you think it's impacted them? And do you think it's created more interest in the sport because of the content that you've been creating?
Yeah, 1,000%. And I feel like it's more positive than negative. I feel like it's shedding light on, it's almost like I had an interview the other day and I was telling them, like, there's so much, because I'm a big sports guy, there's so much football content, NFL content, there's so much basketball or baseball. I like hearing people mic'd up in the games. Mm-hmm. I love hearing that, but there's none of that for horse racing. They have jockey cam, but there's only like the big races, right?
Yeah.
So people don't really get to see the post parade, or people don't get to see the barn area or breezing horses. So I feel like that sparked a new interest. And I will say, I think this weekend at Monmouth alone, I met and seen, I think I want to say 5 or 6 different people from my TikTok.
Oh, that's so fun.
I swear. And even at parks, there's this couple that's starting to come out and I see them a lot there. So it's definitely, and even the comments, I have so many comments saved saying, wow, I don't like horse racing, but I could see how much love and care goes into the horse. Or
that's
I could see that the horse wants to run, because I feel like that's such a big misconception that we force these horses to run, or we use the stick to get them to run.
Yeah.
And you know, once in a while, you'll still have that comment like, oh, this is abuse. I'm like, this is, go into my catalog and see the videos and you tell me if it's abuse. Like,
yeah, sure.
They're abusing me. Trust me. If they didn't want to run,
they wouldn't run.
My 118 pounds is not going to make a 1,200 pound animal run.
No.
I'm usually the one trying to stop them from running faster. I think social media is definitely a platform that we need more than ever. I feel like our sport is in dire need of new interests, new blood of a new generation. It's a dying sport, unfortunately. Every couple months, you'll see a racetrack that's closing. Even the last year or two, there's 4 or 5 racetracks that just closed. So it's something positive. I feel hopefully we could change the tide with social media. Not just me. There's a few other content creators that are starting to get a little traction and shedding light on that. So I think it's all positive for us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we talked about this a little bit with Danielle Montgomery. It's all optics, right? The negative story is always going to get the most attention. And so you have to figure out a way to saturate your news sources and your social media sources with good stories that are happening all the time and nobody really cares about, because people just reading about these sort of gossipy, controversial stories.
Yeah, that's true. People like reading about breakdowns or stuff, nonsense like that.
Yeah.
But even that content creator, Griffin, he's doing such a great thing for the sport. And you could tell he loves it too. I think he has a piece of that horse Sandman.
I think
what they're doing is great. I believe, is it America's Best Racing? They have a little program for content creators to get them into horse ownership. Yeah, something like that, that it's good for the sport. And there's so much good in our sport. I feel, and like you said, I feel like the negative articles and the negative light, negative stories shed a bad light on our sport. But there's so much positive. These horses love running. They do. And there's so much people behind the scenes that make it. There's so much people behind the scenes that get a horse to a horse race also. And I feel like that's not spoken enough. And like, I still have more ideas of getting into that with grooms and hot walkers.
That'd be really cool.
Yeah, exercise riders, assistant trainers, foremen, blacksmiths, vets. There's so many people behind it.
Yeah. We primarily talk about off-the-track thoroughbreds on our podcast, but we use a big umbrella for anything really thoroughbred related. If you were to give some advice to somebody who was getting a horse off of the track, what would that advice sound like?
I get that question a lot, man. And I really don't know how to answer it.
Because that's not like your world, but...
Because I'm going to put it to you like this. Because I've never been on a horse outside a racetrack.
That's fair.
I've never ridden a pony. I'm technically the only pony, he was retired, is the one I learned on for a month. But after that, I was at the racetrack, so it's hard. Like,
it was a month, and then you went straight to the track.
Yeah, yeah. Again, I got thrown to the wolves. My dad threw me on this 10-year-old called Calm, Cool, and Collective. He goes, oh, this horse, he knows, he's easy to jog. I'm like, all right, perfect. My first time on a racetrack at Monmouth Park, he runs off of me, I swear. I'm like, yeah, he's so calm, cool, and collected.
Listen, the horse I got bucked off of when I was a teenager that was an off-the-track thoroughbred, his jockey club name was Mr. Wonderful.
Oh, I love so, it.
I feel like you should just stay away from horses that have names that are a little bit suspicious.
That's so true. Yeah, but it's hard for me to give them one piece of advice, but I do love it. I do love when I hear stories of retired racehorses going on to their second careers.
Yeah.
And I tell my family this all the time. I'm going to have a nice little house one day with a big old backyard, and I'm going to have a lot of horses back there. And there's certain horses that I've ridden that I hear that go to cheaper tracks, and I'm like, shit, man, I wish I could just buy them and just like retire.
Yeah.
So I think it's great with the people that get retired racehorses in the OTTB. So
yeah.
You better be a really big backyard. It sounds like you've already got
I know,
spots
I got,
reserved
I got a
for a few.
I've been checking Zillow a lot.
Me too.
I got to hit the lottery. Listen, it's not going to come from me riding races. It might come from content creators.
There you go.
We do say that the OTTBs are like potato chips. You can't just have one, so be careful.
They
stack up really quick.
They do.
I love it.
Before we wrap up, we have a few listener-submitted questions for you.
Oh, cool. I like that.
Okay, so this one is from Lynn Bowers, Penny Packer. She's a longtime listener. How do you know the difference between getting run off with and galloping at speed in control?
Okay, so how do I know the difference, or how do a spectator knows the difference?
I guess both, but I would say maybe from your first person perspective would be interesting.
Okay, so for me, once I know I'm getting run off with is when you're trying to stop them. And even for them too, for her too. So what you're going to look for is if I'm like got my hands raised and you see me kind of seesawing them, trying to stop or saying hold, or I got my feet in the dashboard, that's how you... That's how you know I'm getting ran off with it, for sure.
You're using all your body strength to try to...
You'll see me standing up. You'll see me, like, with my hands grabbing another hold. I wouldn't get into a panic, but you'll see me with all my might trying to stop the horse from running off.
Yeah.
And honestly, somebody asked me that. Oh, if you're getting ran off, could you please post a video? I was like, listen, when it happens...
You're not
being... Knock on wood, it's not going to happen. I've been doing this for so long that I feel like sometimes, especially since I'm a jockey, we just like, all right, you like certain horses, like, all right, you want to keep going? We just put our hands down and just let them go a little longer. Like,
yeah.
It's a little different for us. Yeah. But I tell you what, the one video that really got me to blow up on social media was that gray filly that was lugging out and I was getting ran off with her, and she was lugging out. And then I stopped her before the wire. And that video was the first video that got 1.5 million views and 130-something thousand likes.
Wow.
She put my left arm to sleep. And I'm like standing on her with all my might. And so that's what it looks like to get run off with.
So what
people like the right. content of you getting run off with.
Apparently.
You should let it happen more.
I might have to. You know, it's funny. I was joking with a jockey. I'm like, you know what? Soon I'm just going to retire from racing and I'm just going to walk around and still act like I'm a jockey and ask trainers if they need help just so I could get content.
There you go.
Yeah.
Why not? All right. So we have another question from Kristen Skewers. Do you as a jockey or exercise rider have any input into the day-to-day training, or are you told what the horse needs for the day? And additionally, are you responsible for installing any particular cues for the horses earlier in their track careers?
Not necessarily. And no. For the first question, no. So I'm basically just the pilot. I don't get told what to do. I basically get told what to do. Right. So once I get to the barn and I get a leg up on the horse, the trainer would tell me, and I think I made a video about this the other day. The trainer would tell me, all right, get on the track, jog them back to the wire, turn them around, gallop, breeze them from the half mile pole, and let them gallop out to the 3/8 pole. Or jog once and then gallop once, but go slow. Or breeze in 49 seconds, something like that. So I get all my instructions from them. I don't really get a say in that. I can't even suggest that because in reality, it's the trainer that has the horses and the horses are in care of the trainer. So whatever they tell me to do, I basically do.
That makes sense. So I had a question, which is, what do you think thoroughbreds have taught you about yourself?
Oof, patience. A lot of patience. It makes you humble too, because you have this big 1,200-pound animal that could really do what they want to do. So for you to, I wouldn't say outsmart them, but for you to control them and go at your pace, it's such an art, but it's so humbling as well. And also, like I said, patience. You have to have a lot of patience with horses. I see riders that get mad at their horse. How are you going to get mad at your horse, at the horses, when we train them to run fast? Or I see riders get mad when a horse is too tough. Dude, this is what they're bred to do, is run. Or you can't get mad at them for wanting to run, you know what I mean? Definitely a lot of patience, yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Ramon, this has been an incredible conversation. You're so interesting to interview. You've got a
thank you
wonderful voice in the world of horses, and we feel really honored to have you come on and give us a little glimpse into the life of a jockey and sharing your expertise of thoroughbred training and racing. Can you tell us where people can find you on social media?
On TikTok and Instagram, they could find me at Moya Rides Races. That's one word. And also, I just have that account. There's no, because apparently there's some fake accounts going around.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the people made 2 fake accounts on TikTok, like Private Moya or another one. But it's Moya Rides Races, and that's on TikTok and Instagram. And on Facebook, it's my name. It's Ramon Moya, Ramon F. Moya.
How many followers do you have? I'm curious.
That's how you're at. On TikTok, I have 86,000.
Wow.
And Facebook, I have 33,000. And Instagram, I have close to 20.
Wow.
I believe.
That's awesome. So cool. And to think about all of the different countries and
let your, so many different
so
countries.
So cool, right? I think people listen to our podcast in, I don't know, 36 countries or something like that. And it's just wild to us to think about. So
that's so cool. Yeah, I had to do a video in kilometers for the people that okay, they were like, what's it? Well, how fast were they going in kilometers? I'm like, I don't want to be rude, but Google's great. Right. Come on, guys. So that's, I'm like, so you know funny. What? I'll do a video in kilometers for you. And it did well. I think I got 25,000 likes, but it was just so funny. But yeah, yeah. And then I get a lot of questions in different languages.
I'm sure.
That I wish TikTok would translate.
Oh, it doesn't do that? That's wild.
It doesn't
wild.
Do that. That's like Facebook and Instagram, you could translate it. You could just click that button. But TikTok doesn't do that. I don't know why. Mm-hmm. So it's, I think, and it shows me my demographic and all these different countries, Switzerland, Austria, Australia,
that's
like
so cool.
Israel. There's so many countries. Like, it's amazing how far it got out. So yeah, I'm definitely appreciative from all the good feedback I've been getting. And like I said, I think it's something positive. And thank you guys for having me on also.
Yeah, absolutely. One last question before we wrap up. What advice would you give to people wanting to ride at the track or aspiring jockeys out there?
I love that question. So you're not going to get it overnight, and you're going to have a lot of bad days, but you're going to have a lot of good ones too. So just be patient, be confident. I get that question a lot about getting spooked or being nervous. Just have confidence. Just know that the worst that could happen is that you fall off and you could get back up. But yeah, just take it one day at a time. We never stop learning. And I made a video about this a couple days ago, how much I've learned throughout this whole content creating process, because it's one thing knowing something, but when you speak it aloud or when you answer someone's questions, it makes you think about it more.
And sure.
I'm like, oh, wait, I knew that, but now that I'm explaining it, it makes me learn it in a new way, and you never stop learning. Yeah, just have patience with horses, be confident on them, and yeah, like I said, you'll never stop learning. Just keep going forward.
Okay, I know we said that was the last question, but we have
I'm sorry, I lied.
You're all good.
We have one last question we ask every guest this, which is, what's one word you would use to describe a thoroughbred?
Man, that's a great question. I don't want to be generic. Hold on, let me think about this one.
Take your time. It's a big question.
Yeah. Majestic. And I'm looking for a better word than that, but I can't.
I don't know if anyone said that actually yet.
No, majestic. I think that's a great word.
Yeah. No, but I feel like, listen, I'm big on words and my vocabulary, and I'm trying to get deeper, and I feel like there's a better word for it, but for now, I'll stick with that.
Okay, fair enough.
Best of luck with all your upcoming races.
Thank you guys so much for having me. And yeah, listen, I'm always here if you guys ever want to have me on again. And
awesome. I think we're going to get a lot of additional questions. We did ask for some questions, but I knew we had so many to ask you, so I was like, all right, let's pump the brakes. And then, but yeah, I think we're gonna get a lot of follow-up
awesome,
questions from this
episode. Yeah, and I appreciate you guys, what you're doing, and also in the podcast, it's super great. So
thank you.
Yeah.
All right. If you like what you heard today, please leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. You can follow OTTB on Tap on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok, and contact us with interview candidates and topic suggestions at OTTBOnTap.com. We love hearing from you. Until next time, cheers.